This is McCray Bogdanoff. I am here with Patty Schimmel, former drummer of the band Hole, who wrote a book, Hit So Hard, a memoir. She will be at Powell's tonight at 7:30 with Janet Weiss. This is Patty Schimmel. You want to say hi, Patty?
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So I have a bunch of questions for you. Mm-hmm. Who were your music influences?
Growing up, it was... I really liked Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, you know, all the big rock bands that I would listen to on the radio. And Kiss was a big one. And then once I got into punk rock and different kinds of music, it kind of swerved over into that direction, you know, like Siouxsie and the Banshees and, you know, Sex Pistols, stuff like that.
All the same music we were listening to in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Was the music industry difficult to work in as a woman?
You know, it was even starting out and choosing to play drums. I had a struggle with, you know, in school band that my, you know, in high school band that the music teacher, you know, kind of always giving me the cymbal part or the triangle part, you know, and not being able to play, you know, and, so I felt that when I got a drum kit and started playing, that I had to prove myself as a player because I was a woman. And and then when I found punk rock, I found and started playing in bands, and I found my way through that scene. There were more women in that scene, and I felt comfortable.
Yeah, that's what I found when I was managing bands. I found that when it was like the hard rock bands, it was different. But when I was managing punk rock bands, there was a ton of us women.
Yeah.
And we all like grouped together and it was special and cool.
Yeah.
What was your best memory of Kurt Cobain?
Probably when, let's see, you know, when we were living together in Los Angeles and I just moved, you know, I was staying down there. And we were just starting to write songs for the Live Through This record. I guess, you know, my room in their apartment was right next to him and Courtney's room. And there was a closet, and he would go into the closet and turn off the light and sit on his amp and write songs in there. And I could hear through the wall, I could hear him, you know, making up songs. And a lot of the songs that and bits and pieces I heard ended up on the In Utero record.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite band that you played with? I know your book says you played with a lot of different bands.
Yeah. I guess not really, you know. I mean, Hole, of course, brought me around the world, and I got to see a lot of things and play a lot of really amazing places. But, I think there isn't one in particular that's my super favorite.
Are you still in contact with Courtney?
Yeah.
When Melissa?
Yeah. And when I wrote the book, when I was in the process of writing it, I reached out to everybody and said, I'm doing a book, and everybody was supportive. And I'm in touch with Melissa a lot because our daughters are both the same age, and they're friends. And so we see each other every year, and we're supportive of whatever we're doing with our lives these days. Also, Courtney, when the book was finished, I sent it to her, and then she called me and said that she liked it and that there were some really great memories that she'd forgotten. So mm-hmm. It was kind of cool to talk about that.
To remember the memories.
Yeah, the good ones.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess we can, this would be a great part to segue into the recovery part, which hit home with me because I'm a recovering addict. What was it like growing up in a house full of recovering people?
The language of recovery and the idea that it's a disease, and it was born, you know, it was part of our, that was my belief system, you know, and the way my guideline for living was part of, you know, the 12 steps. And so when when I turned 12, that was my first drink. And I think it was about figuring out what that feeling was. And I'm not like my parents. I'm totally different. Yeah. So I wanted to explore it and see. And of course, I, since the beginning of, you know, that the moment I can remember, I never felt comfortable in my skin. Never felt, I always felt awkward and not part of. And that's the story of the alcoholic and addict. And,
yeah.
And when I had my first drink, then I felt, oh, okay, now I feel like I'm in my body, you know?
Right, yeah.
And I feel comfortable. And now, oh, now let me begin.
Right.
You know, like it was like a, you're holding your breath for 12 years, yep. And then you're able to exhale. Yeah. Okay. And being uneasy all the time. And like I felt some relief when I discovered drums, like the physical part of drums and that release and that creative and that sort of connection to, you know, this is what I do and what I am and what I want to be. But drugs and alcohol, when I discovered them, that was just more, you know, more of a like, I always refer to it as like this sort of like blanket that I needed.
Yeah. Did you feel guilty when, because you had all the steps in your head when you started using?
Yeah, totally. Like I knew, and that it almost made it worse because I knew my way around the language and I knew how to talk and I knew how to really sort of come up with some real, you know, amazing line of, you know, crap to my family, you know, like
right, what right. You had to be a really good con artist.
Yeah. and to the world, you know, and so to my detriment, you know, that kept me out because I, you know, could really, you know, I thought I was doing a good job at, you know, keeping everybody, you know, at bay about, but eventually, you know, it stops working. It's that those cliches are so true.
Right,
you know?
Right. It's like, did you think people really didn't know or you didn't care because it was rock
yeah.
and roll?
Yeah, you know, I thought that I was keeping it a secret for the longest time. And, you know, I was because everybody in that scene or, you know, in music, everybody's not looking at what you're doing. They're all about what they're doing, you know? So,
right.
But when you're in a band and you're not pulling your weight and you're not showing up and you're struggling and those are the things, just like in a day job or just not like not showing up for your Thanksgiving dinner with your family.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. Yeah, I'm being in a rock band made it easier, you know, because that was part of the lifestyle. But what was not cool was not being able to handle it, you know, not being able to get on the road and show up. And I was never good at that. My hustle on the street was not good either. And I, you know, I could never like, you know, just pull it together and sit down and do my thing, you know, and get to work. I would just like, I can't, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you did know you were an addict right away.
Yeah.
Did it help with your recovery to write this book?
It did. And in a way, I didn't really know how. I thought I was maybe farther along about accepting all the part of my past, but not so much when I was writing it, sort of going back in the time machine, you know, and thinking about some moments and it really triggered me in a big way to think, to get those details and to write them down. And so I had to reach out a lot to friends and in recovery. And, you know, it was weird to like write about a really crucial, tough moment and then close the book and then go pick up my daughter at school. You know, it was those,
right.
That kind of stuff that, but it really showed me the pattern and what, you know, that sort of road of trying to get clean, the grind of being strung out, trying to get clean, relapse, you know, rehab, and that whole cycle.
Yeah.
And it went on and on. And a lot of friends that read the book say, oh, my God, you know, reading the book, I was, what's it going to take? You know, and even my brother, who's got like 20 years clean, read it. And he was like, my God, no, no, don't do that, Patty. No. You know, and he knows.
Right.
He knows the story. So, yeah, it's that. And again, we talk about it in meetings and in recovery that, you know, it's making the same mistake and expecting a different result, you know, is that definition of crazy.
Yeah,
and
being insane. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's that really, it's all laid out in the book. And I didn't want to make that, you know, of course, that time in music was so great and special. And but also heroin addiction and drug addiction, it's not, I didn't want to romanticize it. I didn't want it to seem cool. And yeah, because then it's not a breezy read either.
Right. No, it definitely did not seem cool for the whole book. And I think it didn't really trigger me. I think the trigger was more that you're so scared to go back to those moments. I think you wrote it well.
Thank you.
I definitely didn't feel like, oh my God, I want to go back to that moment.
Yeah.
I'm like, I definitely don't want to go back to that moment.
Right. Yeah.
So how do you feel about your past now?
Yeah, I remember those feelings of, you know, being sick, being on the road. I remember those feelings. And like, those are the things that keep me sober today, you know, that distance, like, and being grateful, like waking up and going, you know, whoa, I'm glad I don't, you know, I'm glad I'm in my own house. And,
yeah,
you know, like, I'm glad I have a washer and dryer, you know, just, and like, not to get too, you know, not to get too far away from those thoughts, you know, and like to stay right sized. And, you know, I think letting go of ego was a big thing for me, not being caught up in being in that band and being, you know, a rock star, you know, and just starting over without that and building esteem through natural things, not because someone said, oh, you're a good drummer, or you're, you know, you played at, you know, Radio City Music Hall.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. Do you hope your story will help others with addiction?
Yeah. When I wrote it, I think about friends or people in the world that are struggling, that need to hear a familiar voice and hear their story. And 'cause that's what made me feel a little sense of relief and give me hope when I first got clean. And some, you know, there's such a business with recovery too. On the other hand, there's the, you know, the sober coach that gets paid to come and, you know, that was also in my story, the guy that shows up and says, I'm supposed to take you to rehab. And I just remember thinking that it was such a crock, first of all. And secondly, that someone that, you know, it's tough when someone is telling you all those statistics. And it's hard to take it from someone that isn't another addict.
Right.
You know, that I'll believe another junkie over anyone,
yeah,
you know, on how to get clean.
Yeah. So do you go to meetings?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like they're the best over any of the rehabs, or because, yeah, it's another addict helping another addict stay sober.
Yeah.
So how many years clean do you have?
12, almost 13.
Yeah.
Coming up.
So you're in the black. Do you go to NA or AA?
I go to both, you know. I got clean in NA in the Valley in California, in San Fernando Valley. And there was a great, strong group of women that I just hung with, and they took care of me. Yeah.
Do you have like a support system in recovery?
I do. And I have meetings at my house every Sunday morning, and each week of women's meeting. And there's so many, most of my friends are recovering, you know, and, or they're just moms at, you know, my daughter's school. Yeah. Yeah.
When did you first start writing?
This book was sort of my first sort of attempt at writing, and I've never thought of myself as a writer really. And so when I started to jump into the project, I had help from Erin Hosier, and she and I worked together, and I would just kind of be sort of punk rock about it and like just start writing, you know, just like, you know, without the rules. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, wrote down a moment. She'd say, tell me about this. And then I would write it out, and then she would sort of polish it up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like it was redoing your whole first step?
Yeah.
Because I felt like I was reading a first step.
Yes. And some of the stuff, you know, like my fourth step too, you know?
Yeah, more of a fourth step, huh?
Yeah, that was really tough, you know? And I thought I was like over this resentment, but apparently not.
Did more things come out this time around? Because I know when I've done a couple four steps, and every time more comes out and more is revealed.
Yeah, it's weird because, well, it's not weird. It's just natural. It's part of recovery. But
right.
That the more time I get clean, the more things start to get a little bit clearer and things get more in focus. And when I look at my old, you know, writing and like writing out my first step or my fourth step and looking at it and then going, wow, I was so in denial, clueless, you know, a lot of things.
Yeah.
That's part of it. But also kind of, you know, now that I kind of can get in touch with what I feel now more.
Right. Yeah. When I go back to read some of the stuff I wrote a year ago, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't high, but I was withdrawing or something.
Yeah.
Will you write another book?
I don't know if I would, you know, not this story is done. And that I feel like, you know, my experience of playing drums and the 90s, that story is done and told, you know, that we did a documentary, you know, and then now the book. And so that's complete. But I've been doing a lot of, I do a lot of storytelling at UCB and Hollywood. And then also I'm working on a story for the Moth podcast about being in a band with millennials.
Oh.
It's kind of good.
So you teach people how to drum now. Do you like, teach a lot of millennials how to drum?
Yes, yeah, yeah, I do. And the girls in my band actually are, you know, like it's just interesting how, what is, they like, you know, like they like Marilyn Manson and they're not ironic about it. You know, it's like serious.
Right,
they really
right.
like,
yeah.
you know, and oh, okay. And, you know, and like my students, they like, you know, their interests really kind of are vast, but they also, you know, I want to be interested in what my drum students are interested in because that's where we connect with teaching, you know, like, what do you want to play? You know,
like they gotta like the same music style.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, if they don't, they don't have to. You know, like one of my students, he doesn't. He likes Slipknot, and I'm like, that's cool. You know, it's a total different thing.
Right.
But I can totally respect it, and let's break it down and see what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. What does your wife think about the book in your past?
Yeah, she, I always talk about my wife's a goody two shoes. Like she never had any kind of substance.
Like, wow.
Yeah, any substance issues. But she is part of Al-Anon, which is what I call the mind your own business meetings, which is she has her stuff is about, you know, trying to control. And so there's that too, that she works on her stuff, I work on my stuff. And she's been supportive of my story and my past. And she's really supportive of the idea of, you know, working with others and, you know, making a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another important part of your story that I read a couple of times was that you came out as a lesbian in your teenage years. What was that like? And what was that like in the music industry? It seems like in the music industry, everybody was cool and they were in San Francisco and we were all loved each other. And but how was it when you were growing up in Washington?
In Washington, it was also part of my feelings about being a, you know, I was a freak. I was gay. And I was going to keep that secret. And I didn't have any role models. There were no other women out that I could look up to. And when I started, you know, I was kind of, when I came out at 18, I told, you know, I came out to my mom and she was supportive. And then, you know, I guess, In music, with the when, you know, everything went crazy in Seattle in the early 90s, it's sort of, you know, with Kurt and, you know, the whole grunge scene, I think his message was a lot about changing, you know, like it's cool to be gay. It's cool to be different and sort of, you know, change the climate and changed what we talked about. Like, that's not cool to you know, to be homophobic, you know?
No, it's not. I think that's what was great about San Francisco is that it wasn't cool. We would kick people out of town who were like that.
Yeah.
Or just not be welcoming to them. But I'm sure in other towns like Marysville, Washington, is that a small?
Yeah, it's small. And so that was important to me when I came out and I was out publicly. And I came out in Rolling Stone magazine in 95 that... so that those girls, wherever they are, you know, at 12 and 13, who feel weird and crazy that because they're gay, that it's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Has there been women that have come up to you and said that you inspired them to come out or?
Yeah, it's happened a lot. And then also a lot of girls come up and say, you know, they started playing drums and because they saw a whole show and that's cool. You know, that's really cool.
Cool. So you dedicated the book to your daughter.
Yeah.
When are you going to, what age are you going to let her read it?
I know. Not for a long time.
Just when she's 18.
Yeah. Not for a very long time.
Okay. Well, that concludes our interview.
Yeah.
Let me stop this.
Okay. Thanks for having me.